So do I go?
Oh, I didn't know that part.
This is worth repeating.
Okay.
This is worth repeating.
Live storytelling from Texas Public Radio.
So I, too, grew up in a small Texas town, Argyle. You guys know where Argyle's at? A couple. All right. It's next to Drop and Ponder and Crum, if you know those Texas cities. But if you don't, it's just south of Denton. And when I moved away from home to make my way in the world, my parents actually got divorced. Now, there were six kids in the family. I have two older brothers, and I actually have a twin brother. And then I have a younger brother and sister. And when my dad left my mom, he moved to Portland, Oregon, leaving Argyle, and quickly became what I guess most people would call a deadbeat dad. He didn't send child support home, and my mom had worked inside the house raising kids, and now was trying to figure out how she was going to make it. She was looking for work and trying to sell the house and decrease her expenses. And I was a young entrepreneur, and I just figured it was going to be my responsibility to make sure those basic needs were met. But in doing that, I felt a lot of guilt, a lot of frustration, just because I knew for my little brother and sister, it wasn't going to be the same childhood that I enjoyed. I got to play the piano and soccer and wore Nikes, and for them it was going to be more about food on the table and making sure the utilities were on. And I noticed with every check that I wrote, I increasingly begrudged my dad, feeling like he had shirked his responsibilities and left him in such a bad way. In fact, I was so frustrated I didn't want to talk to him, and I didn't for 2 years. And it was at the end of those 2 years that I just felt like, boy, somebody needs to give him an earful, and I'm the guy to do it. And so I asked my mom, I said, hey, I'm going to talk to Dad. Have you talked to him? Do you know how to reach him? And she said, well, I know the company he went to go work for in Portland. That's about all I have. I haven't really talked to him either. My brothers hadn't. And so I started there. I called the company and said, hey, you know, I'm looking for my dad, and I hear he works for you. And they said, you know, he doesn't work here anymore. He hasn't worked here in about a year and a half. And so I was like, oh, you know, this is well before Al Gore had invented the internet. You couldn't Google people or, you know, Facebook them. So I really didn't know where to turn. So I thought, well, you know, if he got another job, you know, he'd have to file his taxes. So I called the IRS and just said, hey, I'm looking for my dad, and this is where he worked. And they said, well, this is all the information that you're sharing with us is all the information we have. So if you do find him, you know, tell him we're looking for him too. And so I said, all right, you know. So I thought to call the local police department there in Portland, thinking, okay, I could file a missing person. And they just said, hey, you know, you can't do that. You don't even know if he's missing. You just are trying to find him. What we recommend is that you hire a private detective. So being young and naive, I thought, well, I can't really do that. But I had a photo of him. And so I made a flyer that just said that he was missing. And if anyone knew his whereabouts, that they should call me. And I put my phone number on it. I filled an entire suitcase full of these flyers, got a plane ticket to Portland, and flew there, went to the apartments that his former employer had given me the address of, and thought, I'll just knock on doors. And if people answered the door, I would hold up the flyer and say, I'm looking for my dad. And if they didn't answer, I'd shove it in their door and hope that maybe it would get me a lead. And a lot of different responses, you could imagine, knocking on doors. But I met a woman that actually saw the picture of my dad and said, hey, he used to live here. And I said, yeah, it's my dad. I'm looking for him. And she said, well, I used to see him at this gas station across town. If you head over there, you might find him. So I said, well, all right, are you sure it's my dad? My dad was this kind of white-collar business guy, and so I'm like, what's he doing at the gas station? She said, I don't know, but I always would see him there. So I headed over there and thinking, well, maybe he bought a gas station. And so I went in, I asked for the owner, and this gentleman walks out, and it's not my dad, so I just held up a flyer and said, I'm looking for my dad. And he said, oh, yeah, he used to work here. think he works for this transmission shop. If you head over there, you might find him. So I journey on, and as I head to the transmission shop, I realize Portland, like many cities, has a good side and a not-so-good side, and I'm driving into the not-so-good side, and a lot of graffiti and some abandoned buildings, and sure enough, at the end of the road, I can see the transmission shop, and the parking lot's empty, and intuitively, I'm thinking, it's closed. In one corner of the parking lot, there's some kids that look like they're in a gang, and then the other corner of the parking lot is kind of an alleyway where there's some homeless guys kind of meddling around, and I think, if I pull into the parking lot, something bad's gonna happen. I tried to save some money. I didn't take out the rental car insurance. I know none of you have done that, but I thought, you know, I'll just go ahead and pull in so I can, you know, see the front door. And when I saw the front door, I did see the closed sign, and I don't know what it was, but it hit me like a ton of bricks. I all of a sudden became so overwhelmed seeing the closed sign, knowing that I'd been on this journey to find my dad, and all of a sudden this doubt, what was I thinking? This really didn't seem like a good idea. A bit half-baked, you've flown to a state you've never been to, you're looking for a needle in the haystack, did you really think you could find him? And I don't know if you've ever been on a journey where you feel that level of discouragement, but it was fairly hopeless, and I thought for a moment to say a quick word of prayer. And I just was like, if I'm even on the right track, will you just guide me? And it was sitting in that rental car, looking at the map, trying to figure out, do I get to the airport or do I go back to the hotel and keep looking the next day, that I noticed out of the corner of my eye, one of the homeless guys that was walking across the alleyway. And when I looked at him with that closer glance, I realized it was my dad. Not knowing what to do, I just got out of the car and yelled, "Dad." Well, he looked up and he came running and just said, "Son, I knew you would come. The only thing I could say is you look hungry." And he said, "I am." And I said, "Well, get in the car." And he jumped in, and I had passed a Denny's on the way to that transmission shop. We went there for lunch, and when we walked in, this is where my life changed. We were greeted by a maitre d' who looked at me and then looked at my dad and then quickly looked back at me and asked me if I wanted a table for one. I knew what she was getting at. We just didn't seem like we belonged together. She saw some young kid, so young, so handsome. And then she saw my dad, and she saw him as a bum. But he was everything to me. I remember him making me feel safe when I was afraid. I remember him teaching me how to throw a spiral. I remember him in so many positive ways. Well, I told her, table for two. We sat down, we started to eat. My dad wanted to apologize. He felt like he deserved everything he got. He said, "Son, I'm good. I just, knowing that you care is enough, and I'm just so sorry. I screwed up, and I left your mom in a bad way." And I felt that power of forgiveness, right? I was like, look, I came here to give you an earful, but it's what our future is going to be, and Dad, just come home and live with me. And he said, no, I'm okay, I don't need help. I'm like, well, how do you live? And he lived in this abandoned camper trailer without running water or electricity. He said he had to be careful, no one knew he was there because they would arrest him or shoo him off. And I said, well, how do you eat? And he said, well, there's this woman who has a catering business, and at the end of the day, what food she doesn't sell, instead of throwing it away, she drives the streets here in Portland and she feeds the homeless. My dad said he was the beneficiary of her generosity. Well, you can imagine, I flew home from Portland fairly screwed up, right? I now couldn't see strangers on the street. I saw moms, I saw brothers, I saw sisters, I saw my dad. And so it transformed me, but what I've learned in the 25 years of trying to set food on the table for those in need, that it's when we're at our lowest, when we're feeling most overwhelmed, that if we'll just take the burden of someone else on our back, our load becomes lighter. And that there is an opportunity for all of us to go that extra mile, as a woman did, making sure someone's father got a meal. God bless you guys. Thanks.